the longest time, a retail store was basically the owner standing behind a counter. Think about it, right? Maybe when you were young, maybe when you visited other countries, or maybe when you visited other regions, you actually came across a store that's a simple store with a counter, with somebody standing behind it. You ask them what you want and they give it to you. Over time, these stores became more and more successful. And what did they need to do? They needed to open other stores. So obviously, if I have multiple stores, there's no way I can be in multiple places at the same time. What do I need to do? I need to hire somebody to run my store. Yeah, that's fine, but how do I trust them? How do I know that John, who's running my store in the next town over, isn't just putting all the money, remember, this is days when people paid in cash, putting all the money in his pocket and just giving stuff out the front door to his friends and family? How do I know that? So they invented the cash register. Not only did they invent the cash register, they invented the funky pricing that you see today. You know, $39.99, $9.47. The original reason for this pricing was that people then had to demand change. And when you demand change, you've got to ring the cash register. And when you ring the cash register, a sale is registered, so I know that something has gone out the door. And we've come a long way from there. From having cash registers as a quick and dirty way to keep track of what's really happening with our employees, to having high-tech HD cameras that not only track what you are doing inside a retail store, but even create heat maps of how long you're spending in various aisles, what things you are touching, how long you spend looking at different objects, converting that to data, and then selling that to different clients. We have indeed come a long way. So folks, welcome to yet another episode of Mike and Amit Talk Tech. And this time, we are going to discuss retail technology.
Retail tech. And today, if you're shopping in a physical retail or you're shopping online, everything is influence-mediated technology today. And what's interesting to me, Amit, is that some of these technologies, like the cash register or the point of sale device, have been widely successful and largely adopted. However, other technologies that have had a lot of potential, people are very excited about, have been less successful. So what do you think makes a retail technology successful?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike, right? I mean, I think one interesting technology, which perhaps you were also referring to in recent times, which didn't really pan out the way they thought it was, the Amazon Go stores. So these are the stores for our listeners where you can walk in. All you need to do is you need to have an Amazon app on your phone, which where you're logged into. You can walk through the store by yourself, pick whatever you want, put it in your basket, and walk out. There is nobody in the store. There's no cash registers. There's nobody checking on you. There's just dozens of cameras, and these cameras will automatically charge you for what you have purchased, and they were very, very accurate. However, Amazon is closing down almost all of these stores. So what do I think? What makes them work? First of all, I think is the sheer simplicity. You know, anytime you're designing something at the retail level, it could be B2B, it could be B2C, it doesn't really matter. This thing has to scale. This cannot work in a lab setting. This thing has to work with us humans, and us humans, we are messy. You know, some of us are left-handed. It's funny how difficult it is to account for just left-handed people in the retail context. Think about a typical self-checkout at retail. It's designed for right-handed people. Left-handed people actually have a little bit of an issue. They're checking things out because the checkout is on the wrong side when they're scanning stuff, right? Two people making mistakes. To people purposefully fooling around with the system, a system has to be simple enough and robust enough to handle all of these cases. Secondly, and equally importantly, whatever retail technology you're designing or whatever retail technology you're creating, you've got to remember that it's not a standalone decision. It is a decision that has to tie in with your overall retail strategy. What's your price? What's your positioning? Where are you located? Right? What kind of service assortment do you offer in a typical retail store? So let's take the classic example of something like a Walmart or a Carrefour. This has a very different price, positioning, location, assortment combination as compared to something upscale in the United States like a Whole Food or, for example, your corner local organic mart where which sells only stuff from the local area, right? So the kinds of retail technology that's going to work in these two situations is going to be dramatically different. So I say these are the two key factors which decide the success or failure of retail technology.
The Amazon Go walkout technology seems to me like it's a good idea. You know, some people don't like shopping. I don't particularly like shopping, but some people do like shopping. You know, they like to go there and they pick up the food and, you know, turn it in their hands and so forth. But whether you kind of like or dislike shopping, nobody likes to stand in line to pay. Nobody, right? So it seems like if you can get rid of that, that sounds like a pretty good idea. And yet, it wasn't very successful. So why is that the case?
That's a great question, right? Because in this case, it does fit in more or less with at least one and a half of my two conditions that I mentioned to you briefly. It is simpler. There's no question about it, right? It is simpler. It fits in with Amazon's overall positioning as somebody who makes life easier for customers. Above everything else, right? That is one agenda that has driven Jeff Bezos since day one. How can I make life easier for customers? And Amazon Go stores actually do that. I have a feeling one of the potential problems was that the technology itself was not ready for prime time. I think there were too many mistakes. Secondly, I think at the end of the day, it was pure dollars and cents, okay? I mean, if you're talking about a place like Switzerland, where you and I are fortunate enough to be in, or Norway, you know, where you're from, where you visit quite frequently, where the cost of labor is incredibly high, stores like this might still make sense. But if you look at massive parts of the world where you're essentially trying to replace minimum wage employees with incredibly high quality, expensive AI with equipment, it may just not make sense from a dollars and cents perspective,
yeah,
right?
I think that's right. So causes of failure of retail tech could be complexity. You know, I think with the Amazon Go cameras, they had to be monitored, and it turns out there were hundreds of people monitoring these things. Which leads to the second reason that they can fail, which is they're just too expensive. So I think smart shelves, we've been talking about smart shelves and RFID tags forever, Amit, and they haven't really caught on except for a few niche applications. And I think that's primarily because they're just too expensive and prone to failure. And then there's, I think, another reason, which is the kind of the creepy aspect of tech. You know, beacons were, that was the big thing for a while, where you get location-based marketing. You'd walk through a store and you get a buzz on your phone saying, oh, you just walked past the meat aisle and we're having, you know, a sale on T-bone steaks. And we know that you like T-bone steaks because you bought it three times last month. And, you know, most people don't appreciate this, right? This is intrusive. This is kind of freaky. So, you know, that has not kind of done as well as many people expected. And then I think there's also some tech which is solving a problem that doesn't exist, like the online worlds and the shopping in the metaverse, that nobody's asking for this, right? You know, this is not it's not solving a problem that anybody has. So I think there's a number of reasons why retail tech can fail, don't you think?
I agree with you, right? And one of my favorite examples that actually combines a couple of the things, the creepy factor combined with the, you know, you're not really solving a problem was, so Walmart actually created these AI-driven robots, okay, that automatically restock shelves. So they invested millions and millions of dollars in these robots. Now, if you imagine a typical Walmart, for those of our listeners who've actually seen one, these things are huge. I mean, these things are massive. You're looking at literally, in some of them, hundreds of meters, sometimes kilometers long shelves. So the idea was that instead of humans restocking these shelves when something runs out, you're going to have a robot do it. There were two problems. First of all, shoppers were just creeped out by robots constantly going up and down and looking at what they were buying and what things were running out. Secondly, is the cost aspect. Were they really solving was that really a problem? You know who's really good at stocking shelves, Mike? It's people working on minimum wage. You know, all you have to do is pick something up and put it in the right place. It's not exactly rocket science. So they were trying to solve something that was not a problem, and their solution was something that just freaked shoppers out, right? I mean, it bumped into them. It kind of made them feel washed. So it was a complete disaster for them.
So I think there's some things that haven't worked. And I think there's a few technologies that the jury's still out, like, you know, yet to be determined. I think, you know, augmented reality, virtual reality, they have Sephora, you know, the makeup company, virtual artist. You can kind of see what the makeup's going to like look like on you. L'Oreal does have something similar. You got IKEA doing this, you know, haven't been widely successful, but I think there's potential there. Biometrics as a retail technology, paying with a fingerprint or an eye scan or a face scan. You know, we're seeing this in the face scans being used a lot in China. You know, so I think that has potential, although it hasn't really taken off yet. You know, blockchain for providing transparency of value chains, provenance of products and services. There's experiments with that, and we still have to see whether they're going to be successful or not. So I think there's a bunch of retail tech that's, well, the, you know, let's see. But there's some that have been wildly successful, like, you know, mobile commerce, e-commerce. I think, you know, huge success globally. E-commerce is like $6.5 trillion right now. I think mobile shopping is about 44% of e-commerce sales in the US and a lot more in China. So we're just shopping a lot more through these digital devices, whether it's a computer, a tablet, or a phone. Wildly successful.
Absolutely agree, Mike. And on that note, one part of the mobile e-commerce technology, which has lately been underappreciated, right, is the recommendation engines that are running behind the scene. You know, a lot of this technology, especially when you're shopping on mobile, definitely when you're shopping on e-commerce, there's no way that we can search the same way as we search in stores, for the simple reason that both mobile commerce as well as e-commerce is designed for what's known as the long tail, right? What do I mean by this? Quite simply, if you go into a classic physical store, let's say you're going into a music store, there's only so many titles that a physical music store can stock. So what are they going to do? They are going to stock the best-selling titles. You're going to see Taylor Swift, you're going to see Kanye West, and you're going to see the Beatles. But it's extremely unlikely you're going to see these small, funky, independent bands that only you might like. And online stores have no problem stocking an album that might sell one time in a year. So it's the classic long tail. The flip side of that is that both mobile commerce as well as e-commerce heavily depends on exactly what you were referring to, Mike, which is understanding who you are and recommending you what you would like before you even know it, right? So the moment you walk in, based on your previous purchases, based on your profile, based on what I know you've been browsing, I tell you, saying, hey, Mike, here's a new cool punk rock band out of Sweden that you really, really should take a listen to, right? So this recommendation engines, whether it's on Netflix, whether it's on Spotify, whether it's on Amazon, you know, by the way, you know, that Amazon recommendation stuff, you know, people who purchased this also looked at that. That particular feature, I believe, is about 35% of the $550 billion that Amazon brings in. You know, to let those numbers roll around in your head for a minute. So I think that's a very underappreciated aspect of the whole mobile e-commerce revolution.
Sure. Those recommendations are increasingly powerful, but at the moment, they're fragmented. So, you know, Spotify has its own recommendation engine. So does Amazon. And they don't talk to each other, right? Because they're individual linked to that company and that site. But imagine in the future that you have a recommendation agent, a retail agent who acts for you, that knows your likes, knows your taste in music, knows your taste in clothes, knows your taste in food, that can kind of act as your agent through all these different sites, make recommendations, but also negotiate for you to get the best deal. I think that's the future. That's the future. So you have your own recommendation agent that knows you better than anyone.
A weird version of this, this kind of collaboration that I heard sometime back was, it was one of the music platforms, either Spotify or Rhapsody, I'm not sure which one, had tied up with, I believe, Ancestry.com to recommend you songs based on where your ancestors are from. Not surprisingly to most of our listeners, this did not go far. I mean, I don't know what my preference for songs today has to do with what my ancestors were doing 1,000 years ago or something like this. But hey, they tried at least. Something interesting, right? But to your point, I agree, right? The more you combine data, the more cross-dimensional data sources you have access to, the finer your recommendations are indeed going to get. And that is something we will, without a doubt, see more of in the future.
I think that's right, because you know it'll know you, so it can recommend things that you don't even know that you're going to like, fits you. It looks good on your style. It fits your color, your music, your taste in music, or whatever. So I do think whoever can build this technology is going to have a very, very important role, because they will essentially have the power to represent you to the rest of the retail world. And those retailers will be very interested in negotiating with that agent, and that agent will be very, you know, powerful in negotiating with those vendors. So this is going to happen. It's coming. It's inevitable, even though it's kind of freaky, right? As someone who doesn't particularly enjoy shopping, I'm quite happy to outsource that to an intelligent agent who can find products that I'm going to like at prices I'm going to love.
I agree, Mike. And of course, before we close, we do have to pay the customary regard to privacy, security, all those kinds of things. We do it for all of our tech, and it's no different for this, right? I mean, technology that can see what you're buying, see the frequency of your purchases, understand your needs and wants, can both be incredibly, incredibly useful, time-saving, and even fun. But it can, as always, tend to creepiness. So once again, important to draw the balance somewhere.
Well, thanks for listening to Mike and Amit Talk Tech. I'm Mike Wei, professor at IMD, and I'm here with Amit Joshi. And if you haven't done so already, remember to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And to learn more about IMD's programs for managers, go to imd.org. Bye for now.